time. Is everybody ready?
I'm always ready.
Oh, that's a Moby. That's a Moby, and it's not from Herman Melville, as a matter of fact. All right. Well, I see we're short a board member, but there she is. I'm going to start anyway. Good evening, and welcome to the San Luis Coastal Unified School District regular board meeting, April 5th, 2011. The board met in closed session. We had a student personnel item where we considered high school exit exam waiver requests for students with disabilities. We had a conference with our labor negotiators, and we discussed the negotiations with our employee unions, with the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association, and the SEIU. We're now reconvening an open session. Is there a consensus on the order of business? Okay. Seeing that we have a consensus on order of business, let's get to the approval of minutes. So we have a couple of sets of minutes. We have minutes for March 7th, March 22nd, and then the regular board meeting of March 15th. So we'll start with a special meeting on March 7th. Somebody like to make a motion on that? It's been moved by Mr. Quisenberry.
I'll second.
Seconded by Mrs. Sheffer. Any discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstention? One abstention, so it carries 6-0 with one abstention. We'll move to our regular board meeting of March 15th. Would somebody like to make a motion on that?
I just wanted to point out, I don't believe Mr. Dowler was here for the PBS Project Citizen. I think he was at
Jeff Bourne.
Right, he was okay. At WASC.
Okay, so.
So I would move approval with the amendment.
Okay, approval with that amendment. Do we still need a second on this one?
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Any other discussion on this item? Okay, seeing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain. Carries 6-0 with one abstention. And then we'll move on to the special board meeting of March 22nd. Would somebody like to make a motion on that meeting? Mr. Buckman makes the motion on that. Can I have a second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Mr. Angel. Any discussion on this item? Okay, seeing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain. One abstention, so it carries 6-0 with one abstention.
I'd just like to thank my colleagues for doing all the work in March while I wasn't here.
And we're glad you're back.
We missed you.
We totally missed you. So let's then go ahead for our, let's see, it says here, student representatives. So, I see we have two student representatives. Amanda, would you like to introduce your colleague?
No, I'm just kidding. This is next year's ASB president for Morro Bay High School. This is Haley Ramos.
So.
Ramos, sorry.
She always says my name wrong.
There's a Ramos and a Ramos spelled exactly
okay.
The same way.
Ramos,
so.
Okay.
So next year, remember it. She might yell at you if you say it wrong. But... seeing as I'm the only student representative here, I guess I'll start. On March 30th through April 1st, there is the dance show for our Dance Fusion team. They had some special guest performers, TWAC from San Luis, and other guests from around the county. That it went really well. There were some student pieces, and just overall, it was a great show. April 2nd, which was Saturday, our ASB had our Neon Dance, which is our most highly attended dance. Last year it was our most highly attended dance, not including prom, but we had over half the school attend, and everyone had wristbands this time, and so there's still some students rocking around with wristbands, which is nice to see. On April 4th through 8th, Friday Night Live, that's this week, Friday Night Live is doing Drive the Change. This is Distracted Driving Awareness Month, and during this week, Friday Night Live is taking a moment to go around our campus and trying to drive the change and X the text. We're doing throughout this week an X the Text campaign where thumbprint with performances from our band and choir, expeditions from the art department, student displays of work, including science experiments and portraits, I do believe, from the photography program. And there'll be a dinner of hot dogs sponsored by Blue and White. Thank you, Judy Irons. That's all. And April 18th through the 29th is going to be our spring break. Looking forward to that. 2 weeks off. In extra notes, March 28th and April 1st was our WASC visit. It was really fun, and I'm sure all of you that got to participate in that enjoyed it. I think we did pretty well, so hopefully we get credentialed. And it's kind of a big deal. And to close it, our very own senior Megan Hansen, a basketball player, a three-year varsity or four-year varsity, was titled the County Player of the Year by the Tribune. So we're very proud of her. Those are things of importance. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Amanda. Does anybody have any questions? So what you need to know, Haley, is that when you take that permanent seat, we invite you to stay, and you're welcome to comment on anything that we talk about. So if there's an issue of particular interest for you, please know that you're welcome to stay, and you're welcome to engage in discussion with the board. And we do like to hear the student viewpoint on things. That said, we also know that you got homework and you got other things that you need to do, so feel free to leave at any time. And it's a little premature, but Amanda, I'll miss you, and I'll miss your sense of humor, and I know you'll miss my gavel. So let's move on to the PDK Lay Citizen of the Year, Maxine Nalen. And making this presentation will be Rick Robinette.
Well, I'd just first like to introduce somebody, but the Phi Delta Kappa is a national educational organization, and every year they honor or allow school districts to honor a single volunteer of the year. And as you know, we have hundreds of volunteers in our school district, but we had an opportunity to review nominations, and our principals chose one outstanding volunteer. And so to introduce her and tell you a little bit about her, Dr. James Skoulas from Monarch Grove.
How about that? Thank you, Mr. Robinette. It is with a great pleasure and honor that I present to you Ms. Maxine Nalen, who's our PDK District Volunteer of the Year. She has been volunteering at Monarch Grove alone since the school opened, 17 years, which is remarkable in itself. But it's not just Monarch Grove. Yeah, I know. That's amazing. It's not just Monarch Grove. She's worked at at this school, Sunnyside, Sinsheimer, the IMC, and Morrow Elementary. In addition, she's donated hundreds of books to our school library. She's really indispensable. She does it in a nice, quiet way. She's always around, and the kids know her, and they look to her for recommendations. Mrs. Kirby, who's here, purposely changes her library schedule to coincide with the days that Maxine is here. And I know Ms. Chafin's our librarian, and she is really responsible for this nomination most of all. She's very valuable asset to our librarian, and Ms. Neuhauser is here also to support the effort. So these flowers don't do enough justice for you, but I would like you to enjoy them. And this is Ms. Maxine Nalen. Thank you so much. And I also have the certificate for you. It says Maxine Nalen right there.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Dr. Skoulas. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you? Okay. And so right now the board will have a short recess, and we have some refreshments in the back to honor Mrs. Nalen. Correspondence And the board received a letter dated March 15th from the County Superintendent of Schools, Julian Crocker, regarding the review of the public disclosure of the collective bargaining agreement between the district and the CSEA. And I'd also like to acknowledge that the board received an email today from Jim Nett. He's a
Mr. Miller, I haven't met. Good evening. Welcome to the coast. I happen to live out here, and it's always a pleasure when our school board comes and spreads around your presence so that we can address you and actually witness you, in action. This is a time of excitement in a way, a real challenge, I think, for the board members, in that I'm speaking about the initiatives that Dr. Prater has brought forward. In conjunction with my experience Monday night, and I know that some of you may have experienced Friday night, I beg your pardon, Friday night when the CTA hosted a showing of Race to Nowhere, a film that had an amazing turnout in the community. So I know that at least at downtown, there are a number of people that are interested in what's going on in the schools, and their perspective was shared. Some of you got to witness that. And the opportunity to fundamentally change what's going on in the public schools is resonating nationwide right now. A lot of that, from my perspective, is not positive, and I think that the profession of teaching is being used as a scapegoat in some regards. My faith in lowercase democracy is such, one of the classes that I teach is a, it's U.S. history and world history for seventh graders, but the U.S. history in particular is an avenue for addressing issues of civics. And Sandra Day O'Connor, a retired Supreme Court justice, has that now as her prime mission, that understanding fact from fiction, truth from assertion, the whole issue of being able to be a citizen that can read this ballot with initiatives and understanding what to do with your opportunity of the franchise to vote. You folks are the product of that, and so you really represent the people. And so, I empathize that it must be somewhat of a challenge to be witness to your community asking for a different direction, as was reflected in the film. And whoever came to that showing, there was unanimity in saying the high-stakes, high-stress test regime of No Child Left Behind doesn't serve all the kids well, that many of the parents were saying our kid doesn't fit into that box particularly. So opportunities to look at ROP and other types of training programs for the kids that aren't college-bound would be welcome. With these initiatives, I see a lot of expenditures going on. That in concert with a hiring at the administrative level, which is currently before you as well. That's a lot of money that's being spent, and it's admitted that there is an extraordinarily large reserve. We had some conversation with the superintendent about how large that is, but it's somewhere between $20, $30 million, which we all agree is extraordinarily large. And I understand that politically there's probably a desire to spend that money down, but that's certainly not being reflected in the negotiations between our two negotiation teams. The best way, in my opinion, to change the API scores, if that's really the focus, is maybe let the kids get up later and change the bus schedule, or hire aides for the classrooms of those academic areas you want to rise, and they will go up guaranteed. We're not spending money on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kratzer. Is there anybody else that would like to address the board? Ms. Gould, I'm sorry.
Good evening. I'm Janet Gould, principal of Delmar Elementary. It's nice to have you here with us this evening. It's nice to host you. We'd like to cordially invite all of you back this Sunday, April 10th, for our annual PTA art auction. It's from 1 to 4:30. Thank you to those of you who have already participated by purchasing CalPlop tickets. There are $10 tickets for a chance to win $1,000. Our ELAC families, English Language Advisory Committee, is hosting a barbecue for the afternoon, a carne asada barbecue. Tickets are $8 for adults and $5 for children. We will have three tables full of silent auction items as well as a live auction. Lots of fun activities for all family members, and we hope to see you here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Gould. Is there anybody else that would like to address the board? Okay, seeing no one, then we'll move on to the superintendent's updates, status of the state budget.
Thank you, Mr. President. The recent events in Sacramento revolve around the governor has decided not to continue negotiations with the Republicans to try and gather together two additional votes in both the Senate and the Assembly to extend the current tax structure beyond its sunset date of June 30th of this year. The options left to the governor to balance his budget or present a nearly balanced budget are going to be rather difficult accomplishments and probably will entail some catastrophic and severe cuts to education amongst other state programs. If there's a deficit already, the current deficit is nearly 18%+ of what Proposition 98 should be guaranteeing us. This will drive it closer to 25%. One quarter of the revenue that school districts should receive will be withheld by the state under the current scenario that they think most likely to happen. For basic aid school districts, there will be a fair share of pain. The amount is fairly well settled, and our fair share of pain under the proposal that had the extension of taxes going forward was going to be a little bit less than $4 million. That's our ticket we would have to pay. And under the current catastrophic expectations, it's $6.2 million. So you can see that it's a substantial amount of revenue that we would be giving up from the state of California. There's a lot of details still to be known. The governor's position is being held close to his vest so that he doesn't give up any political advantage that he might be able to gain in order to see this thing move forward. But at the end of the day, his alternatives to no new taxes are continuing deep cuts into state-supported programs, and that'll have some very severe consequences for education. So we're going to have to continue to wait and watch and see what happens.
Okay, are there any board members who would have questions for Mr. Miller? Okay, seeing none, Dr. Prater.
Well, despite that horrendous news, I have some good news. We have some fantastic educators with us tonight from Del Mar, and our principal, Janet Gould, will come, and they'd like to share with you some great technology tools for teachers and for students. Janet?
Good evening, Janet Gould, Del Mar. This evening we're going to introduce you to two pieces of technology here in use at Del Mar, which are clickers, which you should all have in front of you, as well as the Mobi. The clickers came into our schools we had one set of clickers a few years back as part of a technology grant that we had in the fourth through sixth grade. And then a year ago at the Q conference, I was down with Emily O'Brien, one of the teachers who will be presenting tonight, and we watched a Mobi being used, and we're kind of fascinated by it. And Emily put her name in a drawing, was fortunate enough to win a Mobi to use in her classroom. So she brought it back and started using it about last March. By April, May, I had a few more teachers saying, hey, I'm interested in that, and so I had a representative from the company come up and share the Mobi with a couple other teachers, and then they had the opportunity to practice with Mobis, and then I had more teachers this year that were going into the classrooms and saying, hey, those are pretty cool, I'd like one in my classroom too. So we have amazingly generous, supportive PTA who already had put LCD projectors in all of our classrooms and who had put document cameras in all of our classrooms. And so when I went to them and said, the next step is our teachers want Mobis and they want a few more sets of clickers, they said, okay, let us know what you need. So we now have Mobis in all of our first through sixth grade classrooms, and we have the clickers in our fifth and sixth grade classrooms, and I have three absolutely amazing teachers here this evening, Kirsten Bigelow, Emily O'Brien, and Philip Roski, to give you a brief introduction to these two tools. And we're going to start out with Kirsten.
Waiting, am I on? Can you hear me? Yes? Okay. I can only hear myself. Good evening. My name is Kirsten Bigelow. I teach second grade here at Del Mar Elementary. Welcome to our school. This is a Mobi. I know that there's been a lot of confusion about that. It's basically just a wireless slate. This is your mouse. And basically, it has revolutionized the way that I teach. I can't imagine teaching without it, and my students are much more engaged when I use it, and I think that's the key here. The benefits of the new Mobi View that just came out last year is that I have a hyperlink. My part today is just to show you a brief example of what I can do with a math lesson in my class using the adopted curriculum for the district. So I have a hyperlink to my math website. I just pull it right up. I don't even have to be at my computer. And on here, I also have an online keyboard. So as my students are shuffling papers around or anything, I can go through and do my login and make sure that we aren't getting in trouble, right? I just did this for the first time today, by the way. It shows you how easy it is. And I'm onto the website. Now, the way that the primary math works for Pearson, for Scott Forsman Math, is that the students have little like newspapers that they work out of, and it comes with a bunch of adopted manipulatives. Part of this program is it has a gallery full of manipulatives that comes with the software, which comes with the purchase of the hardware. So all of the manipulatives within this gallery match the manipulatives that we've already been given by Scott Forsman. So the idea is that I can be using the manipulatives on the workspace, and they can be using the manipulatives on their desk, and I can be mobile in my classroom to make sure that they're actually representing what I'm used to mind set up, and we're sharing tonight, so it's a little bit different. You know, I can highlight any kind of materials. So the important thing is that I can isolate things, I can be mobile in my classroom, and that the students are much more engaged. With that said, my students all know how to use these. I actually have the benefit of having two Mobis in my classroom. I have a student teacher. She and I are both using a Mobi. One of my kids will be using a Mobi, and I've got like the master one, and so I can manipulate their work. They have it in their class, all my kids have, you know, two Mobis, and they're going around with it. So it's really neat. I can also pull up a blank workspace if I want. When we were doing addition with regrouping, I can just pull up a problem. I can also pull up manipulatives if I want. That wasn't a good example, was it? And we can show regrouping. My kids know how to change pen colors, you know, to add and show and talk through problems. And again, all this makes it more engaging for the students, and I get the benefit of being mobile in my classroom and not stuck up at a computer or a document camera or with a piece of chalk in my hand. So I think my 5 minutes are up, and I'll let Phil take over from here. Again, that's just a snippet, and you are welcome in my classroom anytime to watch more of this.
Thank you, Kirsten.
Sure.
Let me put this down really fast. Give me 1 second. All right. I'm Philip Roski, and I teach first grade at Del Mar, and yes, first graders can do this too. They actually can write on these. They can do a lot with second graders too. Hopefully not in anyone's way. So I'm going to click on what I did. I have a very brief moment, and I'm just going to show you 3 things I do on a regular basis in my classroom. First thing I'm going to show you is you can create graphic organizers that you can interact with, and we're covering parts of speech. So nouns. I created this. It takes like 5 minutes once you kind of play around with it a little bit. And I just click on this thing right here, and I'm able to pull like person, place, thing with the library, and they can come and they can pull it in here. They do this along. They have a whiteboard, and they're doing it on their whiteboards and or a graphic organizer. But it's kind of cool. I have an extra pen in the class. I don't have an extra Mobi. I have an extra pen, and I pass it around, and it's their turn. So they pass around the Mobi, and it's real easy. Dr. Pratter is gonna try this out. So you can't, it's like a video game almost. You cannot ruin it. So just grab one, press down on it, and drag it, and then let go.
You got all the easy ones.
I think there's a teacher up there. I think he goes under, not animal, but person. So you want it? Yeah, go up top?
Go up top to here.
Up top, find some. Without pressing on it, you want to hover a little bit?
Hi, I got it. I see it.
Now click on it, and drag it. There you go. Yeah, there you go. I was watching my son play the Wii this morning, and it's kind of like a Wii. If they can do a Wii, they can do this. So we do this all the time in class. The kids love it. It keeps them engaged, and that's how we do nouns. Let me move this out of the way a little bit so I can see. Okay, I'm going to teach you. Okay, again, we did parts of speech. piggybacking on that, I'm going to show you how easy it is to write. Okay, I'm just going to put, I mean, it does take a while to get used to it. The pen wants swam. Okay, in the lake. And now, here, I can do something really cool. I can take, I call it magic for my first graders. They get all excited. So take it like this, and I just go above it like that. Now, there's a little thing right here. I tap it, and I tell, and it turns it into typed text. It's really cool. Now, this is where it gets really good. So I can go and I can take this, and I tell all the kids, underline the nouns and circle the verb, okay? So they go through on their whiteboards after they've copied down, or I pass this around, and I just do that. I call it kind of like a boring sentence. So I take my eraser. Where's it at? Yeah, get rid of all this. And I want to add in some adjectives. So this is the cool part. Go right here, and I click on it, and I've separated it. Now I can pull it apart and make room for my adjectives. It is really neat. And they go through and they blur some out. And all I can just do is just come here and I can write it in. Smart. And so on. It's really neat. Well, last thing I want to show you today. Get right here. Oh, that's not what I want to do. Pardon me. Where is my back? Got it. There we go. So I want to go.
Good evening. I'm Emily O'Brien. I'm a sixth grade teacher here at Delmar Elementary, and I'm happy to be here with you tonight. I'm just going to load up my file here, and we will get going. So in sixth grade, we spend a lot of time reviewing for tests that we're going to be taking, quizzes we're going to be taking. We do a lot of review for our STAR as well this time of year. One of the ways I can make sure that every student is on task and engaged in class is with the clickers. Now everyone over here in this area has a clicker on their desk. It's the small device kind of looks like a remote control, and it works with similar technology. Also, we're going to be taking a short five-question quiz for fun. It's not going to go on your report cards or anything, just for fun. And what I'm going to be using is a set of questions from a question bank that comes from the ExamView software. Now, our district has already, we already have all of this. It already came with all of our adoptions, so it's already ready to go. So it works seamlessly with this software as well, this workspace software that comes with the Mobi hardware. So all I have to do is, earlier today, actually, I loaded up some questions. It took me probably about 5 minutes. Just didn't want to take up too much of your time tonight. So is this cutting in and out? Are we okay? Okay, so right now what I'm going to do is I'm going to activate your clickers, and as you can see, this little icon came up right here. I can decide to include this session in my gradebook, which can export directly to PowerSchool, or I cannot, so I'm not going to click that for today. Should I just turn it off? Okay, all right. So here we go. I'm going to start the timer, and if I notice that it's taking longer than 30 seconds, I can always add more time, or I can just pause my timer up here as well. So with your clickers, there's a button on the bottom of the clickers, and that will be the power button, so that bottom one you push it once. And then there are two blue buttons on the top of it. Actually, you know what, let me do just a really quick demonstration of what that will look like. You have, if this was your clicker, well, it doesn't really look like a clicker, does it? The bottom has a power button with a little power icon, and then there's two buttons here and here. This button has a symbol that looks like an arrow that goes back. That's like a, oops, I put the wrong answer. Go back, let me put it in again. And this blue button over here has an arrow that looks like this. So this one is the go back, and this one is the send in my answer. Okay, so now that I have that, I'm going to restart my timer. And when you're ready, I can tell which 14 of you, or 10 of you as it were, have entered your answer. So number 3, right out the gates, thank you very much. Nice job. And I'll know exactly when I can end my question, because I'll see that all of my students have entered their answers. We have plenty of time. So, if we were in the classroom setting, I go over the question. I say, okay, let's talk about which of the following is true. Is it A, geography helps us understand the past? Is it B, geography helps us understand the United States? C, geography helps us understand what a place is like? Or is it all of those things? All of the above. Okay, so 5 and 6. It's a safe place. I can't call anybody out here. Okay. We're doing okay. All right, so it looks like we have all of our board members have answered our question here. Let's find out how they did. Now, the green one here indicates the correct answer, so the correct answer was D. It looks like 8 of our participants have answered that question correctly. So nice job. Thank you very much. Okay, let's go ahead and do one more question. Pardon? Nope.
You're safe. Okay.
Also, I can review the question by this here, and it also identifies the correct answer and also the state standard that question was geared towards. Okay. Let's work on one more. The question is asking about a plateau. What would a plateau? Is it a high, steep-sided area? The line between two countries? Mountains pushed up when continents collided? Or a wide, flat plain? There's lots of different modes for the charting, so it's actually kind of a segue to teach graphing as a part of ongoing learning. Also, I can select a random student. So I have it set up for a class of 32, so obviously that person's not there. But if I wanted to call student number 4, I would have your name programmed into here, obviously, but then it'd be your turn. Something like that. Okay. All right. Well, if there are no questions, I'm going to go ahead and release you from your testing obligation. And with that, I will show you one final trick, which is when I power down the clicker so you don't have to push a button. They're already turned off. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any board member questions or comments? Okay.
Yeah, very impressive. Russell, can you get one for the class tomorrow?
I got to tell you that as the guy who's like ultimately answerable for technology in the district, this thing's great. I mean, if it can engage me, it can engage a second grader. So that's just perfect. Okay.
I do have a question.
Yes, Mrs. Roger.
What? Perhaps someone can tell me, what do they cost?
Each of the Mobis are around, I think it's 400 now for the standard Mobi, or 450 for the Mobi View. The price is a little negotiable if we order more, so I'm told. The clickers themselves are about $2,500. However, Kirsten just has a set that she's trying out in her classroom right now, which is kind of like a Clickers Junior. And I think they're $1,700, and they don't have all that for a set of 32. And with those, with these, you can actually like put in short word answers because they're kind of like texting. But with the Clickers Junior, they're just more of the numerical values.
And is Del Mar the only school using them?
Del Mar was one of the first schools, but not the only school. Since we've used them, we've had a lot of different schools come over and watch the Mobys in use. I understand that Seal Smith and Sinsheimer both have orders in for some Mobys. I know that we had some teachers from Las Osas Middle School come over and observe the Mobys in use, and I'm not sure if they've put in an order yet or not. But I know there's lots of people that are interested in them. Kirsten and Phil also presented at the Professional Development, and Emily, all three of them presented at the Professional Development Day in January on literacy, and Philip and Kirsten used the Mobi in the context of their presentation, and a lot of teachers were like, wow, where can we get one of those?
They're very cool. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions, Mr. Markman?
Just a comment. Actually, aside from the being able to ask the questions and get the answers, one of the most interesting things was the ability to actually, well, here's what your clicker is, and draw it and do it, and it was spontaneous, as opposed to so much of the technology we see, which is really locked in. And then the other thing is I've lost my garage door opener, so can I, can I take that home?
Okay, so these are Bluetooth powered then. Very interesting. Well, thank you.
Do these work with any other, let's say, adopted materials other than Scott Forsman, or is it only with?
It's my understanding that our adoption of Houghton Mifflin is too old, and Amelia probably knows better than I do, is too old to get online. But if we did have a more recent adoption, you know, you can go to any website anywhere, you know, and you can go to TeacherTube, get any kind of videos, write anecdotal notes as the video is running to teach note-taking. So basically, when you're out of the actual workspace area, this is just a wireless computer, pretty much. The pen is your mouse, and the slate is your computer screen. So you can run your computer from anywhere in your classroom. This just happens to be the software that comes with the hardware.
And you would need a data projector. Or LCD projector.
All you need is an LCD projector and a projectable surface.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Now, with the clickers, can you enter questions in that you write yourself?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you can create a quick question on the fly just on that white piece of paper. A, B.
Really? So you can create a question. You could create a question there on the fly, and the students could respond to the clicker, and then that using the clicker. And that could then go to PowerSchool? Is that what you're saying?
I think ExamView is the only one that's actually compatible with PowerSchool. If I'm,
I don't know.
We'll have to play with it.
No, but you could keep track of whether the student who was responding, for example, be recorded as a grade.
Right.
Okay. Cool.
I see numbers on here. So if you asked a question, what is 7 plus 4, could I type in 11, or does it have to be multiple choice?
Well, the new set of clickers, which is what you're holding in your hand, has multiple choice with up to 10 choices, A, B, C, or D, true or false, numeric, with a positive or negative sign. There's also decimals and fractions. So it's pretty much like a scientific calculator. Wow. You can enter any symbol as well.
Just to clarify this, so I can...
But the primary A, B, C, D.
I could text a short answer
you could.
On this?
I believe it's up to 160
characters. 260
characters?
Don't quote you on that, but...
That's not on TV, right?
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Well, for example, I could ask you this question here right now. It says, what is your favorite color? So if I wanted to ask that question, I've already entered that it's going to be a short answer, so you could type in an answer. If I were to push start, not that you have to, but
I think we are.
Oh well, yeah. Let's go ahead and try it.
Interesting.
I think the button that does that it has an A B C on it, and then maybe a 1 2 3. I think it might be that button.
Yeah.
Yes, it's the old fashioned T9. Right, you got to do A A A if you want C, or it. DE if you want E. So, yeah. For the size, I think it's pretty good. Should we see it at what everyone's favorite color is? I think we're going to have to check. And this works really well when you were doing a language arts lesson. If you wanted to ask a student, what's a better word for said? And everyone writes in a different word for said. And we compare all the all the words we could put in. It could be a segue from Phil's lesson, actually, if students were to type that in. I'm gonna go ahead and end this because I'm sure we. Okay, so we have some blues, some greens, some purples, and some reds. And of course, these are all blue because, of course, there is no right answer for what is your favorite color. So it's everybody's right. Thank you.
So, hey, Phil, I just one question for you. So, Phil, when you were teaching parts of speech, for example, could you animate the words, for example, and import pictures, say, animate the verbs to show action?
I think you can. I have not got to that part yet,
curious.
But you can bring any picture in you want, anything like that. You just have to save it and bring it in.
So you just import it?
Kirsten says you could add it to your database, and then it's always in your gallery. There's also like a stamp feature. You can stamp any kind of stamp you want as long as you import the picture. There's a lot you can do with these things. It just takes some time just to play around with them and add stuff to your database, into your galleries.
And when you're saving stuff, Kristen, you're saving it on the S drive, or where do you save it?
You're saving it within this software.
On your computer.
On a computer.
Okay. Thanks. Any other questions? Dr. Prater.
Yes, I have a question for each of you. How has this improved or changed your teaching? And as a result, how are the kids changing how they view learning?
Well, it's definitely changed my teaching in that I'm using more of the software-generated resources. For example, the exam view questions, and I'm getting more into the addressing different types of. I mean, it's saving me time because rather than having to design every question and type it into the CPS program, I have a huge source of data. The students, they love the Mobi. They love it. They actually wrote a song about it. I'll email it to you. It's a rap that they did. They really enjoy it. It's an incentive because I pass it around the classroom. If the phone rings or if I need to work with another student, who wants to use the Mobi? And they're very. I mean, kids pick up things fast, so they really love it.
Thank you.
I just want to just piggyback on that. I think they're completely engaged now. I mean, I use it pretty much for. I can use it for every lesson. I can use it for math. I can use it for English, science, anything. And the kids just totally are engaged because they want to be the next one on the Mobi. So all their eyes are on my screen. Again, it's the medium they're used to now. Everything is electronic, so it does capture their sense of wanting to learn because that's what they have at home. They have handhelds, and there is. I don't believe there's an age they cannot learn. I think first grade and up, they can totally do this. So it's changed the way I teach. If I have a classroom management problem, I can just sit down next between Mr. Robinette and Mr. Prater, and they're not going to talk. And if I'm doing the
document cameras in our classroom, I can put a piece of paper under a document camera, project it, and then that piece of paper also becomes a workable space. So it's not just the computer and it's not just the technology. You can still use the paper. Comprehensive literacy. My students have, their notebooks that they're writing in their readers, writers, notebooks. I can project and demonstrate and write on and show them how, to properly set that up. So it's not just something that's computer-based. We can also take things that we've already been using in our classrooms and integrate this in it as well. I honestly can't imagine teaching without it, and student engagement's definitely up with it. So thank you for your question.
Thank you.
Yes, I just wanted to say that when I, a few months ago, came and walked with the school here at Del Mar and saw the teachers using the Mobi, and at Hawthorne, when I observed students using the clickers, that what was so interesting to me and felt so different was the mobility of the teacher in the classroom, watching the teachers walk among the desks as the students worked, and being able to concentrate both on the board and observe the students' work and how they were working on the problems. It all felt so immediate, and the ability to with the clickers to having a student assign a name for assigned to each clicker when the teacher would, say, present a math problem and be able to immediately know, okay, I need to work on this because only 12 students got this correct, rather than collecting papers, grading them, turning them back the next day, to immediately say, okay, we have this problem, how are you doing? Oh, not well. Let's talk about this some more. We need to discuss this particular problem right here and now in this moment and figure this out, and then again present the test or the let's see now how if everyone's getting the same is on board with the same answer. And I think the immediacy and that immediate feedback and the ability to work with the students right then, and the ability of the teacher to be much more fluid in the classroom, moving around, working with particular students, seeing what's going on, it just seemed to be a really different kind of classroom. And as we talk frequently, these are our digital natives here. These are our kids who are growing up with this from the earliest time. You know, it's not your parents' school anymore. You know, it belongs to these kids, and this is working with their brains in a way that they get. And I found that really fascinating to observe.
Great, thank you very much. And this is interesting because when we talk about data, and I know we're going to be talking about the initiatives a little bit later, this is a form of creating data which is helping inform your instruction as teachers, immediately informing your instruction as teachers. I think for us old folks, it means we're going to eliminate the need for teachers to have eyes in the back of their heads, since they're not standing up in front of a blackboard anymore and trying to watch for behavior behind them. And then my last comment is, it's interesting how this kind of, I think, dovetailed to what we heard last week from Pacific Beach High School regarding use of cell phones and personal communication devices in order to help students engage in instruction. And there are some implications for us and for the kinds of teaching that we're going to be hopefully supporting and the kinds of learning that students are going to be doing. It's just really exciting stuff. So thank you very much. Let's move on to item number one, which is a report from the board representative to the Santa Lucia Regional Occupational Program, and that's Mr. Buckman.
Thank you very much, and I'd like to thank the board for continuing to let me serve on the ROP board. ROP continues to be the way to reach out to students that are all college-bound and also trades and technology. The last meeting last month was in Napomo. And probably the most exciting thing is that our online health to career class should be up and running this fall. So we will, in the county, this county will be the first county in the state to have an online ROP class that kids from San Miguel all the way down to Napomo can participate in the same class. Other business that was discussed, it was interesting, we started to have a STEM discussion, and somebody mentioned that our architecture program is actually in the VAPIC classification of ROP there. So it's been an interesting month, and ROP continues to be a viable and growing part of what's going on.
Thanks very much, Mark. Okay, we'll move on to item number two, which is a public hearing for a general waiver request to Education Code 51222A, physical education requirements. Mrs. Delkiskamp.
Good evening. This item and the next one address the same topic, and I just wanted to provide you a few highlights of this item. Since 2005, we've been required to apply for and to renew this waiver on behalf of San Luis Obispo High School, and what we're asking for is a waiver of this particular education code. which requires that students be involved in physical activity or PE for 400 minutes every 10 days. The reason why San Luis Obispo High School isn't able to guarantee that that happens for every student is because of the trimester system. So at a semester school, students would enroll in both semesters in the ninth grade to earn their 10 credits, but in a trimester, they can do that in two of the three trimesters, hence leaving that last trimester where they may or may not have a PE class. What we need to do is ensure that those students for the third trimester are involved in some kind of physical activity or PE activity. And so the students have a choice. They can enroll in another PE class, or they can maintain a personal fitness log, which is part of one of the standards in eighth grade, and so they can just extend that. Our staff at San Luis Obispo High School has worked together to provide additional PE classes so that they have those options. Also, I've presented before to you modifications to courses that would allow students to take certain PE classes also in the ninth grade, and so that opens up their options too, because some courses had been for 10th through 12th graders. We opened up some more for them. And so for the purpose of this item, the management team at San Luis Obispo High School has reviewed the entire application. Mr. Robinette worked with all of our unions, union representatives, and they have reviewed the application. And so tonight, what we're asking is that we conduct a public hearing, and then after that, we can deal with the action discussion item.
Thank you, Rita. So I'll go ahead and open the public comment for a general waiver request of Education Code 51222A. The public comment is now open. Is there anybody that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing no one, I'll close the public close the public hearing. And then let's move on to item number three. Mrs. Dulkiskamp, I think you kind of explained it, but...
Right, I have, and so tonight what we're asking of the board is to approve our request to be able to forward this waiver to the California Department of Education that would allow us to get this waiver renewed for two more years.
Okay.
I'll move approval of general waiver request, Education Code 5122 sub A.
Okay, it's been moved.
I'll second it with some discussion or
sure.
Questions.
What I was going to do first, Jim, is go to the public to see if there's any public comment on this item. And seeing none, Mr. Quisenberry.
Yeah, I'm just a little confused about the attached course descriptions and the schedule of San Luis High. And I think I understand some of the other documents in terms of, you know, the students not in a trimester where they're not in PE, mm-hmm. but I'm not sure what, I mean, some of these are course adoptions and making them available to ninth graders, but I don't understand the ones that are labeled Santa Lucia Regional Occupational Program, introduction to sports medicine. Is that a separate piece that we're going to talk about, or is that an approved PE course?
Those are all courses offered within our PE program.
And they will be available?
They have been.
Okay, now they're not, my question is, some of these are not a physical activity course. I mean, sports medicine is not the same as, you know, PE classes, so can you explain that, please?
Yes, we're required. There are seven components that we have to include in this application, and part of it is they want to see our entire PE program, including electives as well as those talking with Mr. Jones, because part of this process is at the end of the year we need to evaluate it. I haven't heard any concerns in relation to the counselor load. I know last year I went and I spent spent time or the year before, clarified the process. It's been running pretty smoothly, but if you would like any additional information, I could certainly include it in a Friday packet.
I don't need to know specific information as long as you can indicate that there's follow-up being conducted and that it appears to be working the way it was set out to work.
That's my understanding.
So, okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Is there any other board discussion on this item? I was just going to comment that I thought it was real interesting to look at the PE standards and to see what's involved in PE standards. I was going to say it's sure a lot different from when I was in high school or even what I imagined a lot of PE to be, and the requirement that everything be aligned, I guess I was pretty blown away by it and how hard our PE teachers work.
They have. That's true.
So seeing no more discussion, we have this as an action discussion item. So I'll go ahead and ask for a vote. We have a motion and a second. All in favor? Aye. Carries 7-0.
Thank you.
We'll move on to item number 4. Mrs. Delkiskamp, you're up again. Approval of additional new and modified secondary courses for 2011-2012.
Annually, our staff continues to try to evaluate and see what needs our students have that we may not be meeting and how we might do a better job. And these three courses before you are an example of that. And I just wanted to briefly review them. There are two new courses being proposed for the middle school. The first one is called Transition Study Skills Wheel. And the need that this is attempting to meet is that sometimes we have seventh graders who go to middle school and they don't quite have all of the study skills to help them to be successful. Okay? And so this is being offered as part of a wheel. So, for example, at Los Osos Middle School, the students will have four choices for a wheel, and any student can enroll in this course, but also with recommendations from staff, some students will be placed in this course, and it's not for the whole year. It would be, just a quarter of their year, and at the same time would provide them with lots of support to get them started being successful at school. The course on the back part, Student Success Partnership, could be both for 7th and 8th grade. It's a semester course. And my understanding, Los Osos Middle School is currently piloting something similar. They offer this course, and they intend to offer it after school because they don't want it to reduce the elective choices that students have. In order for students to participate, the staff does work with the parents and the student to counsel them into this class, and this class is mainly focused on helping students who are not as motivated at school and really trying to determine what is that lack of motivation. It provides counseling and at the same time reinforces study skills. So we're really trying to meet needs of students who maybe in the past fell through the cracks or didn't get as far ahead as they could have because they didn't get that more intensive support. And that's what that class is. And then the last one, Design 2, is a modification to that class at the high school level. Some of our art classes have 3 levels, but others only go up to 2. And what we're trying to meet is a need where we don't quite have enough students that we should develop a Design Part 3, but we have some students who get to Design 2 and then still have that desire to learn more, and by making this a repeatable class, it allows them to take the course and the teacher can modify their project so that they can continue to grow. So, as I mentioned, these courses really are meant to address our students' needs. And probably the nice thing, aside from allocating sections, which does cost money, there are no instructional materials costs associated with these.
Okay. Is there anybody from the public that would like to comment on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Would somebody like to make a motion?
I have a quick question.
But sure, do you want to?
I'll make the motion and then we'll go.
Okay.
Okay. I'd like to move that the excellent work be put into place. These are exciting.
And so we have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
And that'll be based on input received from staff, sixth grade teachers.
So we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Okay, this is, again, an action discussion item, so I'll take a vote on that. All in favor of item number 4? Aye. Opposed? Carries 7-0. Move on to item number 5, proposed revisions to board policy 3270, sale and disposal of books and equipment and supplies. First reading, Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Mr. President. The California School Boards Association periodically provides recommendations for updating board policies and administrative regulations to ensure compliance with changing legislation. This is, in fact, a response to changing legislation. We have several word and phraseology changes which would meet that legislation, and it's attached in the blue copy, the sale and disposal of books, equipment, and supplies. And it's been updated in accordance with the latest CSBA recommendations. Cabinet has reviewed and approved the proposed revisions, and it is requested that the board consider the proposed changes at this time and suggest any further revisions the board deems appropriate. If the changes presented are acceptable, the board may choose to waive a second reading and take action at this meeting. If not, the administration will take direction and bring the revisions back for a second reading and action at a future meeting.
I'm going to go to the public first and see if there's anyone from the public that would like to address the board on this item. And seeing no one, I'll close that part of it and I'll bring it back to the board for a comment. Mr. Millar.
Thank you. I have a problem with number 4 being contained in a board policy that deals essentially with the proper disposal of surplus materials. This seems to be, I can see To Kill a Mockingbird, some of Mark Twain's works being disposed of because they, potentially disposed of. And in view of the concerns we had about Kaffir Boy and how that was handled, I think this is, and I do think our board policy and about how we handle content and use in the curriculum is a good one. I just see this as sort of inconsistent with that other policy. So I think we should try to reconcile that.
Actually, I share Mr. Millar's concern there, too, and actually almost for precisely the same reason, and that could even apply to some history texts. So, again, I have a concern with this language.
Other comments?
No.
Okay.
I agree.
Okay, so does the board have consensus that we'd like to have this go back to the administration for a closer look at number 4 in relation to, the notion of demeaning, stereotyping, or patronizing reference, as Mr. Millar points out, there are certain classical texts that could certainly be problematic given this definition. So is that the board's? Okay. So you have some direction?
Yeah. It'll be a little difficult, I think, but I understand the reference. I think what I would make is a distinction, perhaps, that this is in relation to instructional materials, and while the example is an instructional material, it doesn't deem itself to be obsolete. I'll work on this.
Yeah.
It is important to work on.
Okay.
Yeah, it may be considered obsolete.
All right.
When they meet one or more of the following, are they obsolete if they meet one or more of the following? Is that
maybe? Okay, so it's not shall, it's a may. And so it's a little bit flexible. The board ultimately would have the right, always has the right, to deem a piece of equipment or a book as obsolete and surplus it. That's where we always bring it to you as surplus property. You have one tonight in your consent agenda, and so I get it. Let me work on it. It might be a little difficult to try and meet your criteria, and I would, if I can't quite do it, I'm going to fall back on this may as opposed to shall and bring it to you with the same language as a recommendation because I can't get anything better. But we'll see.
Okay.
Well, yeah, we'll if I may.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Walter.
One way to approach it might be to have the two policies be an either-or step. I know the other policy is initiated by a complaint.
Right.
So that's somewhat different. And it may be, this may be, or the board's problem may be cured by blending those two things or having an alternative process, you know, something of that nature.
Okay. Great. So we carries 6-0 with one abstention. Thank you very much. Let's move on to item number 7. The adoption of initiatives for student success, Dr. Prater. And before we, actually, Dr. Prater, I'm going to let you go ahead, and then I'm going to go to the public for a comment. We do have a comment.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, before us tonight is the latest and I think best revisions of the initiatives based on the process we use, gathering feedback, hundreds and hundreds of comments from staff and from community, from board and staff leadership. And the initiatives that I'm asking you to adopt tonight by no means is a completed document. It's a good start. And I may come back to you over time and say, you know, this might work better, this might feel better based on the information we gathered, but given the feedback that we've received, which was rich, it was, in my view, it strengthened this document, and I think we've captured, to the best of our ability at this point, the spirit behind the comments, and without watering down I believe the expectation and the clarity of the initiatives and the subset goals. So, I think without going through it all, I think the important components of the feedback, I think in some cases strengthened the subset goals, made them I think clearer and more representative of the whole group, and then from here. Assuming you adopt these initiatives, our team will get busy working on the SMART goals, which are the specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and timely goals, which will annualize these 5-year objectives. And I will bring them back to you to listen, to gather some feedback as well. And that will allow us to move into next year with a better idea of what we're trying to accomplish for kids and really to best support our staff along the way.
Can you hang on, Walter? I'd like to go to the public right now. We have one request to speak from Mr. Evans.
Well, good evening. Tony Evans, kindergarten teacher at Los Ranchos and an educator that may still be tilting at windmills but will not stop. Last week, many of us saw the film Race to Nowhere, and I think really what it asked us to think about is what's the difference between real learning, substantive learning, and simply jumping through hoops by passing certain types of tests. And that really, for me, is the nutshell of, is what I have to ask myself as I look at these initiatives. Do they have the tone that I want as an educator? When I look at the AYP as a way of measuring success or of reaching the goals, I'm not comfortable that it necessarily fosters good teaching or quality learning. Data to inform instruction is a fabulous thing, and I rely on it. But data in and of itself can become a goal of organizations, and that frightens me. An example of sometimes using data just to achieve something that looks good is what we do with our current independent study program. We want to reduce truancy, so we sort of set up a program that has a few little hoops for children to jump through, but it certainly doesn't mirror or doesn't reflect quality learning, even though our truancy rate looks good down the line. For me, the umbrella that I look at are the things we're asking our students to do developmentally appropriate, and are they humane? I have briefly looked at the new core standards, and I'm not convinced at kindergarten that they are developmentally appropriate. And so then I have to question their humanity. Also, when we look at the way we test, how often we test, I have to ask myself, is that acknowledging the differences in our students in terms of learning styles and pace of learning? And I'm not sure, especially with younger children, that that is the case. There may be a consensus in the United States about what these core standards are, but I'm not convinced there's an international consensus that what we're doing is the best thing for children. In reading recovery, we follow the child. Readers, because we started them in kindergarten versus first grade, down the line, they're probably going to be just the same. So, I guess in closing, I would say that an educational environment or community does not have the right to stress out its students. It does not have the right to rob their students of their spark for learning simply because we were in a hurry to get them where they weren't ready to go. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Is there anybody else that would like to come on? Come on. Thanks, Don.
Hello. I'd like to comment both as a teacher and a parent.
Could you state your name, please?
Yeah, my name is Donald Rapucci.
Thank you.
Morro Bay High School. First of all, one thing that I noticed on the initiatives that I'm a little concerned about is we spend a lot of resources. We're focusing our resources on the middle to the lower, and I think that's a great thing. We need to move all kids up. But we have a lot of students that are middle, average students, and higher in their abilities, and I don't see that we're focusing our energies on them as much as we focus on the other half. And I know the other half has more to move, but the goal is to move all students as equally as possible. And that is a concern that I see in all these initiatives as to where our resources are going to go to. The other thing that I notice in the initiatives is we focus our goals on the upper level students, and those are not the right terms I like, but the only ones I can think of, as college, university. And as we just heard earlier, there are a lot of other programs out there that are not college-based where kids can be as successful or more successful, and we all have seen that. That is something that is an option that students kind of get a taste of, but I think we need to look at that a little bit more as to what other options do these initiatives incorporate other than just steering every student to a four-year or two-year college. Okay. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Don. Is there anybody else that would like to speak to the board on the initiatives? Okay, seeing no one, I'm going to go to the board now. Mr. Millar.
Thank you. I just had a question related to the SMART goals. When the SMART goals are developed and brought back to the board, is that where we're going to start to tie in the budgetary finance piece?
Yeah, I didn't state that clearly enough. The SMART goals themselves just take the initiatives and create a more concise picture of what we're trying to achieve in 11-12. So it's a real tight picture. With that, we're going to bring to you what we think we need to properly resource those objectives, and then I'll have you hopefully weigh in on those as I know you will, and I think it's important as part of the budget development process is, okay, so is this going to be enough, or should we prioritize these things is going to be the driving question. And then once we adequately agree on the proper resource allocations to support these initiatives, Then the question then will become, how do we develop the how? And the how, as I stated all along, will be derived from our own staff representation from the sites to best figure out the best way to achieve this at the site level.
Okay. Other comments from board members? Okay. I just want to... Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Buckman.
Red. Sorry, if I... I'm just like, first to take a moment to thank staff. I don't know if I read everything, but I read a ton of it. And I slept really well many nights. There was a lot of information. There was a lot of outreach. There was a lot of input from the community, the staff, the parents, and the community, and the school board. And I really think that there's been a fine job in capturing that. I've noticed some what I would consider some fairly major changes in the initiatives based on the input. And so I don't know how you guys slept, but I think it's really been well. I also, as I listen, as I look at these and I look between the lines and I read, there seems to be a lot of room in here and a lot of doors open that would allow, especially for my favorite, CTE and ROP and those alternative approaches, and maybe also some doors in here that allow for that reaching out. And we're talking about to educate
this child, figure out the best way to help make that child successful. So I know that we have tough economic times and education faces a lot of challenges, but this is not the time to start picking and choosing who's going to get what resources. And one of the things I'm most proud of in this country and in this state is the promise of a free public education. So we should not back away from that. Then there's this false dichotomy of either you're going to college or you're going to get voc ed, tech ed. I worked my way through college, and I wasn't all that talented. So, you know, there is a place for a path through college and higher education that involves acquiring vocational technical skills to enable that path. It's not an either or, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do as I started working my way through school. I had the benefit of the GI Bill for a large part of it, for which I'm very grateful to my country. So I would like to see us shift our thinking a little bit on that question. Also, there was some comments that really kind of struck me as sort of the European style, you know, you take a test at a certain age and boy, if you know you're going to go this direction or that direction, and fulfilling the promise of individuals is more complicated than that. And I think that our staff recognizes that. A lot of expressed anxiety about the resources and how do we do this and are the goals too lofty, and I understand that and I feel some of those things too, but if you don't have the lofty goals, then you just sort of don't reach as high as you probably should, and we don't expect our students to reach as high as we probably should. This is my last comment. Yes, it is. I was particularly gratified by the widespread support from staff for pre-kindergarten, transitional kindergarten. I think those folks understand the results of children not being ready for school. And I appreciate Tony's comments. I'm hoping that the transitional pre-K focus is more on developing those skills to make a kindergarten student successful. But that part was very gratifying. I'm nervous. I'm excited. I think this is why we hired Dr. Prater to a large extent, because when things get tough and you have to start figuring out, okay, can we do this, can we do that, you lose sight of where we really want to go, which is one of our jobs as a board. And I think we've got a framework that's challenging, and to pull it off and to make it even remotely successful is going to be a real challenge, but it gives us something to look to, gives us something to hold our superintendent accountable for, and I know it's going to impose additional burdens on staff, but I think of it more as a clarification what the expectations of ourselves as a board, as an organization, and as a staff, teachers, and classified. I'm excited about it. I think even if we fall short of these ambitious goals, we will have accomplished a lot, and we will have set up ourselves for the next step and the next step, because this isn't a journey or a destination. This is a journey, and we're going to keep making this journey as long as kids keep showing up at our front door.
I agree with Walter. There was a lot of diversity in our comments, and we don't have the luxury of saying, no, we can't educate you, or we can't educate you. They're here. Let's educate them. What I admire is the fact that staff put in so much time trying to synthesize all the public comments, hundreds, pretty close to 1,000 from staff, community, 500 from me and Mark alone. No. And you did a really good job of capturing it as much as you could without changing the overall meaning and the overall direction of the goals. So I really appreciate that. And with this economy, with the fact that taxpayers are talking about what are our public services doing, this is the best time to sit down and say, look, we want our district to move forward. We want to be accountable to you, the taxpayers, and to our students, our future taxpayers, unfortunately. So thank you.
Other comments from board members? Mr. Millar.
I was really struck by how many people in the community don't like star testing. I'm really struck by that.
Yep. Well, if there are no other comments from board members, I'd just like to wrap up and make some comments of my own. I think I've expressed to a lot of people my belief, as Mr. Millar has stated, and I think everybody sitting up here understands that public education is not a privilege, but that it's a civil right to look at what needs to happen for kids, for us to refocus our energies and to move forward. And with that, I'd like to take a motion to adopt the initiatives for student success. Would somebody like to make that motion? Mr. Buckman, do we have a second? Seconded by Mr. Millar. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 7-0. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you to the staff for their work.
Let's move on to item number 8, information related to possible purchase of portable classrooms. Mr. Miller.
Well, Kim's getting that loaded up then. The introduction on this item is that it relates to modular buildings that are going to be proposed for the sites that are going to be requiring it. And as the board is aware, the district will be required to adjust its starting age for kindergarten in 12-13, which will force some children to wait an extra year to start school. These children must be taught in a new educational setting termed transitional kindergarten. And staff has determined that San Luis Coastal will have up to 86 students from all schools identified as requiring transitional kindergarten. In order to house these students, staff proposes to place additional portable classrooms at 3 sites and make other improvements at various school sites. Additionally, in 2011 and 12, there's a potential need for facilities for preschool programs at our Title I schools as a part of the district initiatives you've just approved. Finally, the district also faces the need for additional facilities as a result of growth and program development issues. The accompanying schedule shows the facility needs identified at 5 school sites and the estimated costs for these facilities. Baywood site is projected to need 3 portable classrooms. One, the transitional K/preschool program. The second one is for some SDC growth that's occurring throughout the district, and one for program delivery needs. We currently house 3 program delivery programs on their stage in the old multipurpose current library. The Pacheco site is projected to need one portable classroom that will house a transitional kindergarten preschool class. And
Excuse me, Mr. Miller. I'm having a hard time hearing people tonight, and that was just confirmed by Mr. Millar. I wonder, is there a way to turn up the volume on the microphones?
Increase the volume on this microphone? I also was suffering that, but I figured it was my old age disability.
Nice try.
I suffer. Just ask my wife. Do we have a clicker? Oh, you're the clicker? Okay. Is this better?
That's that is better. Thank you very much.
So, at the Pacheco site, it's one portable classroom that would house a transitional kindergarten preschool class. And at the Smith, C.L. Smith, it's projected to need two portable classrooms, both of which are to address growth concerns. Hawthorne and Monarch Grove also are going to won't need portable classrooms, but they will need some modifications to current playgrounds to make them age appropriate for the transitional kindergarten / preschool programs. Now, what I'd like is if we could go to the next slide, Kim. The proposed facility needs for the transitional kindergarten preschool and capacity increase are basically, this is the statistics I just gave you, and the estimated costs and site plans. And at Baywood, I'm going to let Jeff talk to the particular findings that we've made at each school site. Jeff's gone around and talked with each school site, the principals, the interested staff members, and has come up with these particular recommendations for the board.
Good evening. As you see, for Baywood Elementary, three portable classrooms for those programs in the playground area. I'm going to read the dialogue down below just one time. It does repeat itself for the next few projects. Architectural design and related construction inspection, state agency approval fees, state required inspection fees, playground construction, utility infrastructure, portable flooring, storage furnishings, carpet, vinyl, building delivery and setting. The estimate, I stress estimate, for Baywood is $385,000. We'll go to the next slide. And to orient you, I brought a laser pointer here. Next slide. Pardon me? Oh, go ahead.
Mr. Guy, I've gone out and taken a look at this proposed placement, and it is very tight as you move between the existing playground and the portable. If I don't know how to express myself any better than that, but for ingress and egress
Marilyn.
Want to use a pointer?
No?
Then don't.
As you move to this area here, where we have a proposed playground, this is currently an area that's used as play structure.
It's a play structure now.
So, as I stood there and I imagined kids moving through at lunch, recess, and what have you, or in the case of a fire drill,
It was talked about, but because we don't have infrastructure in place, it really amplifies the cost to start from scratch for electrical, data, phone, water, wastewater. You're starting from scratch up there. Where here, where the portables are located, that was planned 12 years ago for the location of future portables. This space here that you're speaking of, the corner of this play box does get notched, and we increase this path here to 15 feet. So we have effectively tried to widen that corner for the access to the play field by the kids as they file out. There's also the access to the field from this area here.
Right, but you have children leaving the school.
We are just capturing about 10 feet of turf to increase it to 15 feet for right there, because there's already an asphalt path in place. And then this corner, if you go to the other diagram where it was cornered off, you see how this is there? This is now paved. It's wider. This is cornered off. So we create better flow versus just having a corner. This, I believe, is at least 8 feet, but it widens up. This building essentially has to sit here because of the utilities that are in place already behind there. This was also the most likely place to put the preschool versus behind one of the other new relocatables. If you go to the other slide of the Google shot, there you go. We also investigated this location. We experimented with hard fence panels to emulate the space that the playground would capture, and it was not comfortable for Doug with his egress-degress of kids. It channeled it too tightly there. This was where it landed as the alternative favorite.
Okay, thank you for explaining.
Okay. Next slide. Pacheco Elementary, I don't need to read this again. It's the same as previous. But Pacheco Elementary is coming in at about an estimated $545,000. Next slide. This is the office, to orient you. This is the play field. This is the location of the portable. This is the area of play. It's positioned as such because it captures the play area on the school side versus the street side. It made it more comfortable as a setting, plus there's pre-existing trees. There's also infrastructure here in place that we'll utilize to tie into the portable. Next slide. Those aren't swimming pools. They're blue, but it's actually a Port in Place rubber. We have sand, and in this area here, a multi-structure and swings, hardscape with the trike path. We have social areas under the trees, the garden area, and a shed, pretty much emulating previous designs. It's very much like C.L. Smith. This is a interior turf space with access to turf out in the field there. This nestles up nicely for a threshold level entry to the sidewalk once it's healed into the earth there. Any questions?
There we go.
Invisible sort of from the street, so they become a great place for teens to have a teen center on the weekend?
As it is, that takes place, and there's a lot more open space, so you can make that assumption to a point. Whether it's going to be worse or not so bad, it's hard to determine.
Okay, so we're already experiencing some of that.
Yeah, we have activities back here now. This will become a corridor. So it does change the overall visibility to a point, but there it is.
Thank you.
Will any of these playgrounds be accessible to people on the weekends?
Yes.
Because I know that was something that was an issue that I had asked about at C.L. Smith, and we were not able to make that that new playground accessible for the public.
Oh, at C.L. Smith?
Yes.
In this particular case with Baywood, I can imagine that they will be able to get in there. It's a 42-inch fence. It's not a 6-foot fence. So there it is. It's also very exposed and out in the open. Okay, you can see what's going on there.
And also at Pacheco?
Pacheco, it will also have a lower fence. It'll have some accessibility, but it's still secured during the use period.
Right. We don't want people coming in there, but I'm saying on the weekends if a family wants to bring
their
children.
You can get in there if you want to.
Okay.
It's a matter if the gate is left unlocked or if you go over the fence or whatever the agreement is for that site. It can go either way.
Okay. Thank you. I would be interested if we can figure out a way to allow the public access to these playground areas. I think especially for families with small kids, it would be nice for them to be able to have that size playground equipment.
The playground being here is very open to the community. This fence is low and open and not slatted, so there's plenty of access to it visually and if you wanted to go in. C.L. Smith is different in that it has a, you know, a higher fence plus it's slatted for privacy and wind. Next slide. So C.L. Smith, two portable classrooms and a playground area to a point. Same text there, $400,000. Next slide. This site requires, it's a little more complicated. We have an existing building that needs to be moved, and that's a portable, over to the next to the STAR building, STAR program. This would be then Sun and Fun. That opens up the space for more kindergarten play, and the portable buildings would be located here, and this is the kindergarten complex currently. So it adds to the volume of the current kindergarten area. Next slide. This is the kindergarten area existing. This is the new building location. This is the portable that would have to move over. And then we also capture with the fence the existing play box that's on this playground. And so this becomes a kindergarten compound, adding a third class. This additional portable is for another primary grade. The door faces the school. This door faces the play area. Of course, there'll be access from the back as well. Next, go ahead.
Comment on C.L. Smith. It's a really neat design. That particular kindergarten has that large shed that opens up where they can store materials. So it's
very cool, yeah.
Great, you can move that third kindergarten over there and not be the stepchild.
Yeah, they currently are using a classroom that is not kindergarten for a kindergarten class, so and they're walking to the play area. So this will really add to the dimension of their school. Question?
Yeah, Jeff, thank you. Great. The visuals are really helpful.
Good.
So as I'm looking at C.L. Smith, we're taking a portable and we're taking it all the way around to the end of the field right near the baseball diamond.
Yes.
Up against the apartment complexes.
Go to this previous slide with Google.
And this field gets a lot of use, both from the community and from youth sports.
Yes.
And so my question is, is there utilities down there to power that portable down by the?
When this became STAR program with some special ed program, we brought water and waste line to that existing building, which it did not have before.
Okay.
So we can tie into that. We have electrical. We can bring in data. And we might have to face this building so the door faces the field so it doesn't narrow out the space by the ball field.
So you might change it from...
Yeah, we'll reorient it to add more space by the chain link and the backstop area.
Okay. Thank you.
We could convince PTA to upgrade some of the playground equipment. I know at Pacheco in particular, they've asked if we can upgrade some of the play equipment, if you would meet us halfway on installation.
I don't disagree that there could be some upgrades at that playground. There's actually space that would take a new structure, even if one was not removed in the existing playground area. Whether or not we contribute is up to...
You want us to spend money on that? So, actually, if that's what the interest of Pacheco is, we'll have to have that discussion and flesh it all out with the PTA and the administration. But if that's their interest, we'll talk.
All right. I was just hit up by the PTA, so I'm trying.
They may be doing some striping as well, and they could do that curb in front of your house, Phil.
It is near Shell Smith, but I don't think that...
Mr. Quisenberry?
Glad they're that they're enjoying themselves. Two questions. One is, are we purchasing or leasing these portables? And two, what's the life expectancy if we're purchasing them?
The purchase is the preferred option at this time. We do need to go out for a proposal for quotes and the whole scheme of things. We're talking with the county office. They might have one or two surplus portables, and if that's the case, then we would acquire those. The expected life of a portable is designed for around 20 to 30 years. Their actual life extends well beyond that. There are 40-year-old portables in use in our district, so it just depends.
So I have a very similar question. Thank you, Jim. Even within our own district, do we have some underutilized or portables that are not being used? I'm thinking specifically maybe Los Osos Middle School, the R buildings.
Yes, but I think that the major problem with them is they're not designed to accommodate the space we would put them. In other words, the windows are not in the right place, the doors aren't in the right place, and they don't have toilets. Most of
that's why I bought my last new house was because the
because it was available, it didn't have a door, right?
Right. Okay.
The truth of the matter is most of these portables have to have some sort of a bathroom accommodation in them, and so that's one of the limitations.
Okay, and then besides, you're looking with the county office at some possible existing ones, but are there other avenues to look at, as the car dealers say now, pre-owned?
Yeah. We're dealing with the three major manufacturers in terms of their existing inventory and their knowledge of where these things might exist.
Thank you. We
will go and take care of that due diligence before we actually purchase something. But remember that the design features have to match our site, and it may limit us.
I appreciate that. So these numbers that we're looking at are high-end. We could see possibly lower numbers.
You could.
Okay, thanks.
Next slide.
Yeah.
Oh, we have one more element of this just before we get going. Do you have
okay,
a question?
Go there? Ahead. No,
okay.
Go ahead, please.
The other element is that at Hawthorne and next slide, and at...
This is the office. This is the existing kindergarten play area.
I can't do it.
The classroom that would be utilized for developing a preschool or transitional kindergarten is here. We're going to convert this turf area into a port-in-place rubber play structure area. It's a little hard to see, but that would be the location.
At Hawthorne, we're using an existing classroom and modifying it for our purposes. Next slide, Kim. And at Monarch Grove, we just do the same thing. The play structure modification will make it age-appropriate for the preschool age group. It currently is an underutilized, not utilized kindergarten classroom.
And can I ask a question, Mr. Buckley?
Oh, please, go ahead.
Were you going to ask a question about Monarch?
No, I have a totally, entirely different question, and I appreciate your...
Okay.
Please go.
I know one of the concerns I had with the playground at Monarch was the school garden. What accommodations have you made for the school garden?
You're correct. This was previously laid out like a kindergarten play area and later adapted to be a garden. With great passion, they've endeavored to make this what they want it to be. So we met, both Eric Rick and myself and James Schoolis and their garden staff, and talked over options, and the agreement was to leave the garden in place. We'll fence it in a reasonable manner. We'll put the play structure on the existing hardscape area or the concrete, and then we're also going to create an opening in this block wall, put in a new fence, and capture some more open space for the future.
At Pacific Beach High School, and I was shot down, but would you note?
Your interest was noted also.
Interest of two.
Maybe the same response.
Yeah.
Okay, going back to Baywood School, we are talking about putting in three portables, one with a restroom, and somewhere in here, I believe that I saw that one of them was for the additional SDC class.
If you put it to Google, I can show you how that will go. This building right here, this existing portable, there are two there, has a bathroom in it.
Right.
And because this was not the favored spot for a preschool, we put this preschool down there. We will displace this sixth grade class and put it in one of the new portables and put SDC there. So we're bumping that classroom for the bathroom use for SDC. They don't currently utilize that bathroom as a sixth grade class.
Okay. I guess my question would be, I don't recall it coming before the board for approval of placement of the SDC class at Baywood on the Coast. Was that something that we've discussed previously?
No, but I'm not sure that we would bring it to you. If we have the need because the sizes have expanded, then we would take our best shot at putting it into a operational program at the correct place and at the right time. I'm not sure that if it doesn't involve a change in program or expenditure of money, that the board would have an issue with that particular idea.
I would opine that Baywood currently has two SDC classes and is the largest elementary school in the district, I believe. I'm not certainly not opposed to a opening up another SDC on the coast. I think it's very appropriate, but I think there could have been some discussion about placement either at Baywood or at Monarch Grove, where there's space available.
If the board wishes to have some sort of a discussion about this issue, we can bring it back with justifications and have that discussion.
I don't think the board was aware of the issue, but they may wish to have some discussion about it.
Now they are, and yeah, maybe they do. But that would be something that is fine with us in terms of presenting you the justification for it.
Thank you, Mr. Miller.
Mr. Miller, what are you looking? I see that this is an action discussion item. Are you looking for action this evening, or sure. Can this be brought back
Excellent
at the
question.
Next meeting?
Yeah, and thank you, because that is the way to tie the ribbon on this, is that what we're looking for is the ability to that the board is going to approve this in concept. We're going to go out for proposals on the purchase of the portable classrooms, and you understand the placements, and depending upon the economic conditions of purchasing these portables, then we would go forward with purchase and placement with your approvals tonight.
So you're looking for approval to purchase this evening?
Correct. You guys would have the contract to approve when it becomes available, but until we finish our request for proposals from the manufacturers, we don't have anything to give you in that respect.
So what you're asking for us to do is approve your pursuit of a contract and intent to purchase, not a purchase of these buildings right now.
Well said.
Okay. I have an interest. Can you hold on just a sec, Jim? I have an interest, Marilyn, in what you're saying, and I think I would like to hear from the folks there to make to talk about that classroom placement as well. And I'm, for me, I think, given what you said, I would support going out and getting prices and looking at all that, knowing that it would be brought back anyway for board approval. So that's
to.
How I'm going to land on
oh,
this.
Oh, that's fine.
Okay.
And that has to happen.
Okay, Jim?
My question is the source of funding for the purchase of the portables and the changes that are being made to the various campuses.
These are growth-related issues, so we are able to access our developer fees funds for the purchase of these buildings.
Thank you.
So are you looking for a vote tonight, or are you looking for consensus to allow you to go forward?
I'd like to have permission via a vote to go forward to spend this money from the developer fees account if we can find a suitable supplier and the board agrees to the contract that would follow.
Okay. So you're looking for a vote? Or are you looking for consensus?
I'd prefer a vote.
Discussion? Okay. Let's take a vote. All in favor?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's move on then to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you'd like to pull an item. Item number 9, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 10, acceptance of donations. 11, disposition of surplus property. 12, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 13, approval of purchase orders. 14, approval of warrants and payroll. 15, approval of revisions to BP 1113 district and school websites, second reading. 16, approval of revisions to board policy 3580 district records. 17, approval of international student exchange program for 2011-2012. 18, approval of California high school exit exam waivers for students with disabilities. And 19, approval of summer field trips for the migrant education program. Okay, we have three requests to pull. We request item 12, 15, and 17. I'd like to hear a motion to approve the rest of them, please.
I'll move approval of 9, 10, 11, 13. No, yes?
Yep.
14, 16, 17, no. 18 and 19.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
I will second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on the action consent agenda items? Hearing none, all in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 7-0. Item number 12, Mr. Buckman.
Just real quickly, Mr. Miller or Jeff, the blue, item number 4, the 210 Bluebird wheelchair bus. I'm wondering, the propulsion, is that diesel? Is it the CNG? Are we continuing our efforts to go as green as possible?
This was a bus. First of all, we blew up two engines in two different special ed buses.
Well, that's green.
And so it put us in a bind for a short period of time. At that moment, it was the manufacturer. Actually, what started the discussion was a neighboring district had one for sale, but at a higher price. And when we went to check on its manufacturing specifications, the manufacturer told us about this one that they had. 30,000 miles, nearly new, and it was a cheaper price than a substantially higher mileage one from a neighboring district. So we're pursuing it with board permission to purchase this, add it to our fleet. I think it's just a basic diesel engine. I don't think it's CNG. I'm pretty sure it's not CNG.
Okay. All right. I'd like to move approval of item 12.
Any further discussion? Okay. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 7-0. Item number 15, approval of revisions to board policy 1113. Mr. Buckman.
I'd like to make a pitch for, in the second paragraph, the superintendent or designee, rather than deleting the shall and in replacing it with may, I'd really suggest the superintendent or the designee shall establish design standards. I think once we give up the right to establish design standards, it's going to be very hard to bring them back, and we can always allow whatever goes on under shall, and then if we need to bring it back and let them do what they want. But once we let the horse out of the barn, I'm very concerned that we're going to lose control of what's going on terms of design. So I make a motion to amend.
How is the use of the word may seen as relinquishing some right the district has to the design of its own website?
The superintendent may establish. I would my preference would be that the district does do it. It shall do the design.
So okay, I understand that, but I don't see where using the term may means we're waiving some future right to design our own website.
I appreciate your getting me to clarify this. The superintendent may, so the superintendent may or may not decide to go ahead and establish design standards. As a board member, what I would prefer would be, and would make the motion to amend, that the superintendent must or shall make the design standards. So I would make that amendment as a motion.
Okay. So we have a motion to accept board policy 1113 with the change in the second paragraph from may to shall. Do it.
There's a shall. Excuse me. There's a shall in the third paragraph talking about content guidelines. And that's where the contents you're talking about, having it, making sure we have a calendar, a school newsletter, access to other, so something that's uniform throughout the sites, whereas the design is, hey, we want to put a picture here, or we want to have stuff going across the top versus going down the side. I don't, what are those called, frames or something like that? So I'm trying to clarify the difference between the design and the content standards, I guess.
I think that when we would discuss design, it's about placements, it's about additives, it's about color and other issues when you open up the page. When you talk about content, it would be the calendar, as you were talking about, and those issues. Every web page should have a district or a site calendar on it. Okay, so that would be your consistency that you would be looking for from sites in terms of content.
I guess I'm more comfortable then with content rather than design, as long as I can one-click access the menu so I know what my kids are going to eat for lunch. I'm a very happy parent in that case. So. Okay. Although, put in a plug, look at Mission's website. Talk about an easy website to look at.
So do we have a motion to approve item number 15?
Yeah, I'll make that motion.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Buckman. Seconded by Mr. Millar. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 7-0. Item number 17, Mr. Quisenberry.
As a recently retired teacher who taught EL classes, I have a concern about some of our exchange students. It appears to be my experience anyway, that more and more of these students are coming in with I'll just say, just with low English skills. They're not very proficient in the language. Now, in the past, we got a lot of students through AFS, and those students seem to have a pretty good command of the language. As we get students from some of these other programs, and I'm not sure that's, I mean, it may be true of AFS, these students are coming into the EL program because they're just not able to survive in regular classes, certainly in regular English classes, at grade level classes. This is a concern, and I don't know how we address it with the approval of these programs, but I just wanted to voice that and make sure that the board members are aware of this. You know, they're not experiencing success in the way that the AFS students used to. You know, they're creating a greater need at the school sites. At least that's my experience at Morro Bay, and that seems to be, in my opinion, kind of a growing problem.
So what are you asking for, Jim?
I'm just making a comment on it. I don't know what, you know. I'm sure we have reciprocity with the countries that send the students, but my concern is that, you know, in the past, the students that coming to us had a better command of the English language. I think experienced more success at our schools, struggled less than many of the students we're getting now, and it creates an additional burden for the EL program.
Mr. Millar, and then Mr. Robinette.
I think Jim raises a very interesting point. It just kind of made me curious about how does the funding follow the student, and if, particularly if we're accepting students without funding who are adding to our burden of EL, why are we doing that?
I don't know the answer to the funding piece. I can tell you that all of these organizations are somewhat independent, and my understanding is that most, if not all, require English proficiency in their application. We know, however, I mean, I've hosted exchange students year after year, and that is a stated English proficiency on an application coming into the country, and an actual student's proficiency are two very different things. We've had students who have had very little English that wrote a beautiful application to be accepted over to the, so you know, someone wrote a beautiful application to have them accepted into the country. The funding piece, I don't know, but all of these are independent organizations that have their requirements. So if it's the board's
piqued my thought processes, and it's just sort of one of those things we always approve every year, but you know, times have changed, so maybe we need to step back and make an examination of, all right, what are the impacts of participating in these programs? What are these, well, I was going to say, what are the students getting out of it, accomplishing it, but frankly, that's sort of secondary to the bigger issue about, is this impacting our district? Is it a good thing for us to continue to participate in? And I have no pre-formulated opinion about that. I just think it's worth asking ourselves the question.
Looking at a bigger picture, you know, I've hosted exchange students as well, and I got to travel the country and just take kids, you know, I'm sure you as well have shown your students around, you know, opening your experiences, so to speak. As you eloquently put, you know, we open our door, or we educate whoever arrives on our doorstep, and so sometimes we get to open a big picture for some international students.
If it's okay, this is new to me. And you raised some excellent questions that actually, when I'm out and about, and I have spoken to a number of exchange students since being here, and I think what we could do is bring this back in May with more information. I'd like to talk to some teachers. I'd like to talk to the principals, and then look at the criteria. Just do a better job, perhaps, of bringing the board a bigger picture, more comprehensive look at what this all means. And if it's okay with you guys, we can bring it back at the May 10th board meeting.
Okay, is there any objection to bringing this back? Okay.
I think the timing's fine.
Okay, good. So let's move to advanced agenda. Does anybody have any items they'd like to add to the advanced agenda?
I do.
Mr. Millar.
First of all, I'd just like to say that I really am sorry that I missed the Pacific Beach presentation on cell phones. I did read the materials, and my usual course, if I have to miss a meeting, is to watch the replay, but I haven't had a chance to do that yet. But it's an issue that's near and dear to my heart. Jim brought it up recently. I would like to see us look at the whole cell phone picture again. I actually liked Pacific Beach's policy before the change they recommended, but the change they recommended was interesting too. But I'd kind of like to take a bigger view of it. I know we probably won't return to the pre-cell phone smart device days, but I think it might be worth talking about.
The genie is out.
The genie is out.
So was that something that the board already talked about? So we're good on that.
So it'll come up.
Okay. I would like to bring two items to the board's attention. The first is that as we have tonight approved the initiatives, I would like to see the board create board goals that could be aligned to the initiatives. And I see that as a process that we can't do immediately, but that I would like the board to start considering that as a measure of whether we're doing the kinds of things that we should be doing as a board. And so I'm wondering if anybody else would be interested in engaging in that kind of discussion.
Absolutely.
For our retreat in the summer. Okay. And then the second thing, I'd like permission from the board to work with Mrs. Holmes to come up with a way of doing a sign up for the clerk president meeting, so that if board members, of course board members always have the ability to come to the clerk president meeting, so that we can know who's going to come, and in case two people want to come at the same time, we have a method of determining fairly who should be able to attend those meetings. And so I'd like to work maybe with Mrs. Holmes and then bring that back to the board if that would be okay. Okay, seeing consensus on that, so Kim, you and I can work on that maybe? Okay, great. Is there anything else? We do have board reports. I'm sorry. Any board reports?
One advanced agenda. I don't think I asked for this last time, but board policy on district goals, superintendent goals, I don't think I asked the question correctly in that. Do we have enough folks supporting revising the board policy on goals to bring that to advanced agenda? Or to bring that, is that on there? I think it was it 205? 0200.
I think it's 0200.
Right, and I think it was sent in a Friday notes. So looking to revise that. Is that, how do I go, what's the next step?
You just did it.
Okay.
So you need to see if there's...
So board policy 200, it's a little antiquated. I think it's our superintendent's goals from 2000 to 2005, maybe. And now that we've adopted initiatives with some very lofty goals, I think our board policy should reflect that.
Okay. So perhaps, Dr. Prater, with the board's permission, could you send a copy of what that board policy looks like, and then could we bring it back at the next meeting and discuss whether we want to do something with that? Is that okay with you, Phil?
Absolutely.
Okay, and I'm seeing people shaking their head on that one.
I will.
Okay, moving on to item 22, reports by board members. Mr. Quisenberry.
Well, Mr. Angel had his light on first. I don't know if you want to go that way.
He's going to formulate
okay.
My thought.
You caught my eye first.
I don't want to steal his thunder. Just a couple of things. On March 21st, the Youth Gang Task Force had a presentation by the Sheriff's Department and various people that deal with the problem of gangs. And I thought that I wanted to mention that Dan Andrus and Bob Chernow were there, and some other folks from the district, teachers and so forth. It was very interesting, and I think it was interesting for a number of reasons. One thing that I got out of it is it was talking about gangs as not necessarily just a law enforcement problem or a school problem, but a community problem, and what are some possible, you know, not only who they are and identifying where they are as far as that goes, but the idea that there needs to be cooperation among all of those agencies to address some of the gang issues. One of the other things that was important was that this presentation brought in the fact that we're dealing with gangs not just, you know, that are Latino gangs or Asian gangs or whatever, but we also have some sort of white power groups in the area and in our community. One of the main presenters was Luis Rodriguez, who's written a book, Always Running, which is a very good book about his own experiences as a gang member and then his ability eventually to move away from gang involvement. And then we also had some folks from the Homeboy Industries, which is sited down in L.A., and their attempts to work with gang members and drug addiction and so forth. Got a chance on the 23rd to go to the World Cafe, sponsored by the San Luis High School Friday Night Live, and I think Phil can fill you in on that a little bit more, but it was well worth the time, and some interesting discussion was there. And mentioned before, went to the Race to Nowhere, and four members were there. Rita Delkiskamp came and represented the school district. A lot of teachers, a lot of parents, a lot of, I thought, constructive comment made by the people that were in attendance. And then finally, had a chance to go to Morbay High School for the WASC, meeting the WASC accreditation team. So, thank you.
Busy, huh? I was at WASC, so great job there with Mr. Quisenberry. And the one thing, then the teen drinking seminar in J2 from Friday Night Live, what the students really talked about was the every 15 minutes program and how that really makes them stop and think. And so just kudos to that particular program. Kudos to, is it Mr. Frank Warren for putting that together and Friday Night Live crew. Then went to the Pack Beach open house, and what a great job Pack Beach does in getting their families invited and to show up to a continuation high school open house. Plus Miss Harrigan does a great job providing treats for those things, so that helps. What else? Los Osos Middle School. I got to visit Los Osos Middle School. One of the great things I saw was in the morning they were engaging students in having them do yoga out there. And Dr. Al Frank was out there doing yoga with the students just right before class started, getting the kids to open up their minds and just think and be ready for the day. Mr. Al Frank had a plug that he had had a computer meltdown and that particular day. And IS&T and the support staff was just phenomenal in getting him up and running again. Lovely technology. And then I had a chance to go to San Luis High and see the memorial service for Mr. Melton, and what a wonderful job that San Luis High did in putting together a memorial and capturing the thoughts of students and teachers about Mr. Melton. Thank you.
Thank you. On April 8th at 11:30 at the San Luis Courthouse will be the beginning of a major rally to get a budget adopted by June, to get a budget that's a balanced budget with cuts and with some revenue increases. Right now I think they're expecting probably over 200 people. I'd like to invite everybody on the board, and I'd like to invite everybody that gets to see this, oops, probably not before then, but as many people as possible to come. The rally will start on the courthouse steps and then move to the public library where Mr. Blakesley will be addressing the Chamber of Commerce. And second, out at Los Osos Middle School Thursday, and one of the families was going to have, one of the children's families was going to have the gas cut off in their home. There's a process in place out at Los Osos Middle School using a family advocate. The family advocate was on the phone getting the gas kept on. It's a tremendous tribute to a partnership that can be formed with a school and an outside agency. This time, particular time, was the link. And just stepping in and helping our students to have what they need to come to school to be prepared. So it was great to see that happen.
Thank you. And as you all know, I've been up and spent a lot of time in Sacramento. One of our folks pointed out that we've had 13 board meetings since last June for the CSBA. I'm proud to announce that we did hire a new executive director. His name is Vernon Billy. He's got a tremendous amount of experience working with public schools in California, was a legislative advocate for CSBA, was worked for San Francisco Unified School District, was on their cabinet as a legislative, also one of their legislative advocates, and currently is working in his own legislative advocacy company. He's a great guy. He's got lots of enthusiasm, and I'm very excited for what he's going to bring to education in California and for our kids. So he is not a gambler. He is one of the, just like a humble, straight arrow, honorable guy, and that's one of the things that totally appealed to me about him. All right. If there's nothing else, then this meeting is adjourned.